Hey, during the break, I was checking on that story of the atheist Madeleine Murray O'Hare, and a fellow by the name of David Roland Waters, who is now dead, died in a prison, killed her, one of her sons, and her granddaughter, stole money and everything else, and then buried the bodies in a very gruesome way on a Texas ranch. She died in 1995. We'll be back with your phone calls now and our guest, David Kapelian, How Evil Works on Coast to Coast AM. And David, if one really understands how evil works, can't you use this in your everyday life? You could use it at the office, just about in any walks of life?
Absolutely, George. That's the reason I wrote the book, because I'm a journalist, okay? I'm not a theologian or anything like that. So I'm writing this from the point of view of a journalist, and I'm telling all the big news stories, and my modus operandi is this. If I can show how evil works, which just that's just, you know, the basic principles, there are a few principles of deception and intimidation and seduction that are used over and over again, and if I can make them really clear with the big news stories, then you know what? People can see them, we can identify it, we can glean some insight into how it affects us in our own lives, because really, evil is something that just works in us. Rocks are not evil. It's not in plants, animals. It's the moral dimension of human beings where we kind of there's good and evil, and we can incline in one way or the other way. That's our domain, and it really is helpful to see these things in extreme examples that make them very clear, because evil is basically subtle. If it weren't subtle, we wouldn't fall for it so easily. And if you can find it in the extreme examples, that's why I've done the book this way, to make it really clear and lay it all out there on the table, and we can see, oh my gosh, I always knew it was something like that, but that's it. That's it right there, what I've always wondered about. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Okay, let's go to the phones. We'll go to John in Lamont, Pennsylvania, to get things started on the wild card line. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. You give me so much I could be ready to rant about. And I've called in before about things like the drugs, the Prozac, and so forth. I had called in before. I had been prescribed Prozac. It is an antidepressant. For what was diagnosed as depression, but actually turned out to be dehydration. So it kind of shows how desperate some of these people are to push these pills. But at any rate, mainly what I wanted to ask you about, I apologize if I missed, if you'd already covered some of this, but what you think about some of these hate radio talk show hosts. sorry, George. No, that's the thing that's refreshing about Coast to Coast is we don't get that kind of thing. And sometimes I turn on the radio during the daytime, and oh my gosh, I just can't stand to listen to any of it. Usually they're taken off about liberal agendas this, liberal agendas that, and just trying to denigrate people as much as they can. And they don't really bring up, sometimes they'll bring up something in the issues and you start to kind of agree with them, and then they take off on one of these tirades about people, and you can't stand it anymore. You know, whether it's Neil Bortz referring to people as cockroaches, or if it's Sean Hannity and Mark Levin and a whole bunch of the others that endlessly repeat the mantra of Barack Hussein Obama. I actually wanted to kind of thank those guys, Hannity and so forth, for putting Barack Obama in office. We'll find out whether it's genuine thanks or sarcasm, I guess, and how it goes. But I just feel like every time he said that, tried to pointedly use his middle name like that, he just drove another 1,000 listeners to vote for him in disgust.
I don't know if that caused people to vote for him. I think that this was such an anti-Bush. I don't want to get off into a political tangent here, but I think it was such an anti-Bush agenda vote that almost any Democrat would have won at the time. But getting back, David, to how evil works, it's emotion. Talk radio is emotion. It affects people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one man's talk radio is the other man's or hate speech, rather, is the other person's truth, because
right.
The right and the left, if you've heard some of the people on the left on radio, not very many, because most of talk radio is conservative, but there are those on the left, and they are unreal. I mean, they're like calling for, you know, they should take Cheney's heart out, and you know, I forget the exact quote, but I mean, really disgusting. And so you've got both, but I agree that, you see, one issue is, are you speaking the truth? The other one is, what's the energy you're doing it with? And even if a host, I won't even name the host. If a host is saying something that may be true, but if he's doing it angrily, okay, well, that's going to turn some people off. What I believe is that it's possible to express yourself in a civil way, but you can be strong. I mean, you can be really tough and strong, but it doesn't have to be full of rage. To me, I draw a difference between being strong and powerful and being upset and irritated and full of rage, and that I disagree with. You know, I like Sean Hannity. He's a personal friend. I think he's a good man. But, you know, when you're talking about people on the rest of them, about hosts that are talking with anger, yeah, there is anger. I hear hosts talking, hosts that I agree with what they're saying, but they're too angry in what they're saying. And I agree that that could turn people against what they're even saying.
Isn't that anger reflective of how that other half feels? And they just basically bring it onto the airwaves.
Well, you know, let's put it this way. If you're Rush Limbaugh, who's sometimes angry sounding when he's talking, but what he's seeing is the country that he loves basically losing its freedoms, losing its the economy, of millions of people losing their jobs, losing their homes and so forth. So let's just say, for the sake of argument, that he's right in what he's saying, but he's upset about it. He's angry about it. He wants to change it. So that comes out in your speech. And if you don't agree with their politics, you say hate speech. I'm sure the guy on the left feels just as strongly and has a sense of justice and really feels like that whatever his cause is, he thinks the war is wrong and these people are dying for naught over there. And he is angry and abusive in the way he says it. He's doing the same thing. But the thing is that if you agree with his politics, you tend to say, "Oh no, he's just telling the truth." The other guy is the hate speech.
True. But as you well know, truth be known, the economic mess started during George Bush's administration.
Well, I think the economic mess started like in 1913 with the Federal Reserve.
Well, but you know, in terms of our awareness of the collapse, the subprime mortgage collapse occurred under George Bush's watch. Was probably going on before that.
But, oh, there's no question about it.
But the collapse occurred then, and I'm not so sure that anger was out there at the point where it should have been, where it is now. Bottom line is, and when you talk about distrust, I don't think people trust who's ever elected anymore, and there is a symptomatic problem of what's going on.
Well, I think the polls certainly show that.
Yep. Absolutely. Let's go to Steve in Salt Lake City, Utah. Go ahead, Stephen.
Hi, George. A long-time listener, first-time caller. You know, you guys, I have to echo the last guy's statements that, you know, you always give a nice, neutral point of view, and I appreciate that, George.
I do the best I can on that, Steve. I mean, sometimes I hold back, but I try.
I'd like to maybe get some clarification. Maybe I misunderstood what your guest was talking about with the religion thing. Before I go off, I'm very well educated in almost every religion, and I'm a reverend in mine.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of know what I'm talking about, but was unclear if he was saying that some of the new neo-paganism and Wicca and stuff like that were part of the evil, or if they were not, because I mean, the argument can be made that all religion everywhere is guilty of controlling people through fear and through lies.
All right, well, let's get him to restate what did you mean by that, David? And of course, Wiccan, though it may be construed as witchcraft, they believe in God. They believe that God is a male female, but they don't, you know, believe in sticking needles into people or anything. But
right.
Go ahead and clarify.
What I was saying was the common perception, there is a fairly common perception that Wicca is a form of Satanism. And I go in and I explain what Satanism is, and I explain what Wicca is, and the Gerald Gardner and the whole. I quote extensively from Wiccans themselves about what they believe and what their view is, and I draw a distinction between them. In the end, I have just to be fair, so I'm not hiding anything here. I do come down on the point of that I believe there is deception involved in Wicca and in pagan religions, but most of the chapter is about Wicca, and I'll just to get right down to it, most religions believe there's a creator, and then there's the created, okay, and the created basically is nature, okay, and I'm talking about religions that are worshiping creation rather than the creator of creation, and how it's easy to get lost in the feeling of spirituality and respect for the spirits of all the different components of nature, but that there is when all is said and done, there is a disconnect from God. So that's a kind of a Christian viewpoint of it. I am a Christian. I don't make any. I don't hide that in any way in the book. I'm a journalist. I'm a Christian. I'm writing the book from a journalistic viewpoint, and I'm salting and peppering it with my religious view. But basically, I'm basing it on dozens of psychiatrists and psychologists and experts, and I'm weaving together an analysis of what I see. But it would be dishonest for me not to say, yes, I have my own bias or I have my own worldview, and that's what that worldview is. But I'm not particularly an orthodox type of Christian. To be honest, I don't go to church. I believe differently than a lot of Christians do. So therefore, it's not safe to think, oh, well, I know what Christians are, so I know what this guy believes, because I'm kind of just have my own view of the way I understand things. But as far as Wicca, I believe there is deception involved in it, but I don't believe that it's Satanism.
Next up, we go to Francine in Marietta, California. Hi, Francine. Thanks for holding.
Hello, gentlemen. Longtime listener. I'm a Roman Catholic. Always have been. I did study Wicca for 3 years in my 20s. What you're talking, just real quick, I want to ask a question, but what you're talking about is a little bit more animism, where they worship the spirit of nature in Wicca. There is really more of a reverence for the god and the goddess. Mm-hmm. You just may want to check on that. But anyway, I do have a question for you. I've always heard that certain serial killers, like Richard Ramirez, smell like wet leather. And this has always intrigued me, because I do believe in evil and I do believe in good. And so I wonder if you have encountered this, because I think this may have something to do with the fact I do believe that this is a very evil person. And I wonder if you can expound upon this. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm sorry, I do not know about Ramirez and the issue with the wet leather. I do remember what a low-life Satan worshiper that he was, but I don't know about that part. But, you know, I do believe in that.
And nor do I, David.
Take pardon?
And nor do I. I had a serial killer expert on a few weeks ago, and we didn't talk about that, but
yeah.
That's a first.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead. The rest. Was that it?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Let's go to Denver, Colorado. Tom, welcome to the program. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you? I'm a longtime listener. The first time I ever have talked to you. I have an interesting sidebar on Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Okay.
In about 1971, I was at the University of Northern Colorado, and I attended a lecture of hers in which she just went on and on and on against all religions and was lumping them all together and into some sort of ridiculous mess. I stood up and spoke and just said something like that. At the moment that happened, I had a vision of her. Every now and then I see something symbolic of what will be, it seems. And I saw her kneeling with a couple of family members around her and begging, oh, God, help us. Help me.
How strange.
And I told her. And she just scoffed and made ridiculous fun of me and how stupid I was and what an idiot and on and on and on.
She said that to you?
Yes, and I wasn't being nasty or anything. I just said, I don't know what it means. And then when I heard about the way she died, because I think there was talk that she was murdered.
She was tortured.
Yeah, and I think they were on their knee, or, you know, kneeling literally. And I've often thought, I'll bet this is what happened. Whether she literally went, oh, God, and meant it, or just she was desperate, who knows. But, she just had a great time making light of it all and acting like I was a total idiot. And I was totally earnest. I said, I don't know what it means.
Well, when Phil Donahue was doing his very first talk show in Dayton, Ohio, on a local basis, his first guest was Madeline Murray O'Hare, and he used to say that behind the scenes, she would berate him for being a Catholic. And she was also, wasn't she voted the world's worst woman or something by one of the magazines or something like that?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. Let's go to South Carolina. Dale, it's your turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Dale.
Yes. I want you to know that I really have enjoyed your talk show. I've only become a recent listener.
Oh, thank you.
It's really interesting, some of the subjects you deal with. But I wanted to say this morning that, first of all, I am a Christian also. And I wanted to make a comment about the drugs for antidepressants and stuff.
Sure.
Now, I've never been on them. I've never been on antidepressants or anything like this. But I have heard a lot of people that like want to put their children on Ritalin because they're too rambunctious or don't pay attention in school, and they tried to put me on Ritalin when I was a child, and I thank God that my mother never let them because I was just a little boy, boys being boys, you know. Anyway, back several years ago, probably about 12, 14 years ago, I lost everything I had, and still am married. With three children. Back then, I had three children. And there's nothing more humbling for a man that can't provide for his family.
Right.
And, you know, it was a very trying time for me. And my wife was a Christian, and, you know, I was raised in church, and I had a personal experience with God as a teenager. So I knew about God. And at that particular time in my life, I had walked away from God, you know, not trusted in Him. And for 6 or 7 years, I fought and scraped and worked dead-end jobs and just did whatever I could, legally, of course, to provide for my family.
Hey, Dale, we're going to take a break, but I want to come right back to you, Dale. Don't hang up. We'll come back and finish you up in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Dr. John Gray joins us, Venus on Fire, Mars on Ice, on our next Coast to Coast program. And then on our Tuesday show, Paul Davies joins us, the Eerie Science, renewing our search for alien intelligence. So the week will be underway. Let's go back to Dale now. Dale, I want you to finish your story here while we got you. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I think I left off about 6 or 7 years of scrape and struggle to try and provide for my family. And there was that, even at one point after we had our fourth child, that my wife and I with four small children lived in a two-bedroom single wide that you literally had to walk off the floor joists, because if you walked anywhere else, you would fall to the ground.
Oh, my.
And, yeah, we had a really hard time there back several years ago. And like I said, I was a Christian, and I had fallen away from God. And, you know, these things started happening, and it was very bad. It was just very bad emotionally for me. I never let my children see me cry because I didn't want them to see their father depressed. But, of course, my wife, she caught the full brunt of it. There were many times where I just sat on my bed and cried. You know, it was like, why can't I provide for my family? And the last time that I really had this emotional breakdown, my wife was not present with me, and I was just crying. I was like, God, you know, what can I do? You know, what is there for me to do that I can just make this turnaround? And I kid you not, and I know a lot of people don't believe in God, and a lot of people believe different things in this, and many people may say I'm crazy, but I literally heard a voice in my head that told me, said, Dale, I allowed these things to happen. I allowed you to lose everything you had to keep you from losing your soul. And as soon as I heard that, it was like, Lord, what have I done to my family? Because of my own pride and my own arrogance and the way I acted with the material wealth that I had before I lost everything, I have caused this myself. This was my fault. It wasn't God's fault. It wasn't anybody's fault but mine. And I bet it wasn't 3 to 6 months after that, things turned around. I got me a new job making decent money. My wife and I ended up buying a five-bedroom double-wide trailer that we still live in today. And it was just, we bought new vehicles, a new truck. My wife has Yukon XL. My children are healthy, other than when they were born. We've never had to go to the hospital for anything. And, you know, of course, routine doctor visits because of school shots, or, you know, if one of them happens to get a little cold or something, that's expected. But, and it's an amazing turnaround. And all this time, I never once wanted to try and take any kind of antidepressant, because I'm the kind of person that believes that, personally, drugs are not the answer for me. And it may not. My wife is a registered nurse, so I do know that there are cases where people have to take medications for certain emotional distress, sure, or, you know, different things. And I'm not saying that's bad. What I'm saying is that before these 30 million people in America turn to drugs, maybe they need to try and look within themselves to try and figure out what the problem is. And if you're open your mind to it, you may even want to look to God for help instead of medications.
Good point. And we're going to be back with final calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with David Kapelian and his work, How Evil Works. Final segment, final phone calls. David, let's get back to Hitler just for a moment. After he got out of prison, after he started pushing his big lies, how did he continue to manipulate the minds of the Germans? I mean, he had them all buffaloed. How did he do that?
Well, you know, you can see from just the short part that I read from Mein Kampf on the air, he had a real perception of the, let's say, the underbelly of human nature. He really understood how to manipulate people. He understood people's weakness better than people understood it themselves. And he used that for all it's worth. It's been said that he mesmerized people with the sheer force of his conviction. I mean, I watched him when I was a kid, and he'd be waving his arms, and he beaked and sneaked and beaked, and I didn't speak German. But you see, this is a guy who's like angrily waving his arms and saying something, but certainly with great conviction. And that in itself, a very strong leader who speaks with no doubt in what he's saying, it has a kind of a hypnotic effect on people. But basically, there's so much been written about Hitler, but he understood the mindset of the Germans, their upset at the Treaty of Versailles. He just basically understood how to blame everything on the Jews. He understood how to give hope to the Germans, and he played them like a violinist plays a Stradivarius, and it's amazing that this was a extraordinarily advanced
country with advanced, you know, Western culture and technology and so forth. This was not, you know, Cambodia with Pol Pot. But, you know, human beings, they have that. We all have a dark side to our nature that, you know, we don't have to give in to, but it's there, the potential to be, you know, angry and jealous and cruel and vindictive and impatient and all that. And if you're a predatory person like Hitler, you just understand how to use that and to, you know, and he did it.
Yet his evil caught up with him. He got, it ended for him. It doesn't always work.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the nice thing is that ultimately, I think everybody knows in their gut, good is more powerful than evil,
yeah.
Despite the way things look in any particular situation on Earth. Ultimately, if you believe in good and evil, and the source, I mean, if you believe in God, God certainly has to be more powerful than evil. Anything else just makes no sense. I mean, I don't even know anybody who thinks that. They just would be an atheist. There's nobody who believes that, you know, God is not as powerful as the devil or whoever the source of evil is. So, yeah, Hitler, and I have to say, thanks to the U.S. that is hated by that international left we talked about earlier, that had the courage to go overseas and sacrifice lives for people they never met before. You know, that's why I love this country. It has a magnanimity, a sacrificial nature, a goodness that just you don't see anywhere else. And so when I see people that hate America, not for its flaws, but they actually hate its goodness, I have to wonder about those people.
Well, and what has made this country so great, as you know, David, it's the people here. It's the hardworking men and women who just continue to push for the betterment of society.
That's right. I think Americans are the greatest people on earth, and I'm so tired of hearing them being put down and it was this thing now that they're racist. You know, and listen, America is the least racist country on earth, I would say. And if electing, you know, 53% electing a black man as president doesn't prove that, nothing's going to prove it.
No, exactly. I think the sad part about all this is how evil works, because in that scheme of how great this nation is, you've got a lot of people out there that are greedy, manipulative. Look at some of these investment banks and the things they've done. And that, I think, is what people hate. I think people hate outside of the United States, when they look at this great nation, they look at how it's also abused. And it has been abused in many cases, sadly. And I think that is what has hurt the great image of this country.
Yeah, there's no doubt. America has been it has been compromised. It's been you know, a great deal of evil has been allowed to take root. And really, when you get to, well, what's the solution to that? Really, you got to go back the way you came. We were asleep at the switch. We allowed the, you know, the infiltration and subversion of our institutions that we discussed earlier. And people, really, the number one thing, people say, well, what can you do? You know, there are certain things you can't do anything about. But you know what? Every individual soul, I believe, is absolutely precious in this life. And there's something about waking up and not believing lies. And just there's a certain, just finding our own integrity and realizing that life is a gift. It's a miracle. You know, Albert Einstein, the famous saying, he said, you can look at life as though nothing is a miracle, or you can look at life as though everything is a miracle. And I tend toward the latter. I walk past a tree and I say, you know what? This tree is a miracle. If it grew up in like 10 seconds, everybody all over the world would be, you know, bringing the media from around the world to cover it, this magical tree. So it grows over the course of 50 years, and we think nothing. We spit when we walk by. But this world is full of miracles and wonderful things, and I just think we really need to appreciate it. And we have a good side, we have a bad side. That's our lot in life. We have this moral dimension, and it really, you know, whether you believe in God or not, if you get pulled toward that dark side, okay, things go really, really, really badly. And that's what we see, because all the bad stuff you're talking about, investment bankers, all that stuff is the cumulative effect of just individuals that are losing the battle between good and evil inside them. And so this is where it starts. We, each of us, have to win that battle between good and evil inside us.
All right, back to the phones. Final calls now. Brenda in Florida, welcome to the program. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, George. Hi, David. Thank
Hello.
You for taking my call.
Of course.
I've listened to you, since you came on the air, but never has a show got me so bad. My daughter has the Stockholm syndrome, and I listened intently when you talked about Hitler always keep them emotional. Well, he did, but they got into such a rut, they connived. It's a long story. I'll just try to make it short. My boyfriend of a very, very long time and I decided to move out there and help keep the family farm, you know, out in the country. And it went all right. And I had a little grandbaby who I adored. She was 1.5 at the time. And I mean, I just loved her. I'd had spine surgery in 99. I was recovering. I was thin. I felt about 19. And one day I said something that aggravated him or something. He's attacked other women, and I disliked him, but, you know, I walked around him. And he came up and clubbed me from behind with her tricycle. No one was home. My boyfriend was way back in the back of the house. And mind you, I'd already had my neck operated on, my nature, I got, you know, I was out for a second and I got right back up, and, you know, I was going after him, and as I went after him, he slammed the front door and hit me in the head, and it was oak, but it still didn't knock me out. It gave me a real bad concussion, and he
all right,
took
Brenda,
off.
The clock's going to get you here.
Okay,
so
what I want to know is there any way to get to my daughter, help with the Stockholm syndrome without getting the state of Florida involved, because they will just muck things up.
Are you saying that you're still all together? And this
No. I had to leave, and my daughter called me last fall. I didn't even recognize her voice. And we got together. He'd tear phones up when we'd see each other. And the last time I saw my 3-year-old grand, but she's 3 now, she had a mild black eye. And they said imagining things. So now you can see how torn up I am.
Well, David, you know, you're not the sociologist here. I think, Brenda, you got to go to the cops. I mean, that's the only advice I can really give you. As far as the Stockholm syndrome, do you think people need to go see psychiatrists if they are being used this way, David?
Well, not necessarily a psychiatrist. I mean, a counselor who has their head on straight and who the person trusts is always a good thing. But that could be anyone. You're talking about somebody who basically has had their mind screwed with. And there's something about being in a normal environment where that's not being reinforced all the time. And you have – look, Elizabeth Smart, when she was found, okay, the police found her, she denied that she was Elizabeth Smart. But you know how they got her back to admitting who she really was?
What happened?
Because she had a wig on and she was really messed around with – they showed her a picture of herself before she had been kidnapped, and she broke down and she cried, and she admitted that she was Elizabeth Smart.
Yeah.
Got to be something that brings them back. I don't
you
know what it
jar
is.
Them. You got to jar them. That's right. But in this case, you know what? Little boy showing up with a black eye, you got to call the cops.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, there's no way out. Trina in Eureka, California, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Trina.
Hi, George. Hi. I appreciate your taking my call. I'm
sure.
A long-time listener. I'll make this quick. I know time is short. I've spoken with Art many a time and Ian once, and it's my privilege to talk with you and your guest tonight. Doctor, I assume
he's
it's
not,
doctor.
He's not a doctor.
Okay. David.
Journalist David.
I'm very discerning and a long-time believer in God, and I'm not ashamed of it either. And I've been reading a book called The Handbook for Spiritual Warfare by Dr. Ed Murphy. I don't know if you've heard of him. But my question, I started about 20 years ago with some friends of mine in the state of Washington, a peer advocacy drop-in center for the mentally disabled. And we have a organization now that's worldwide and functioning, and it's great. You know, they've got one here in Eureka called the Hope Center, and that's a descendant.
And
my question is, you know, there's a lot of anger and quiet awakening in America and throughout the world about, you know, all the injustice. And when you look back, for especially from baby boomers and people before, how do we get around the mistrust of our government and our spiritual leaders to go out in the open and protest? I mean,
well, how do you do that? I don't think you can, David. I think it's those people. They need to realize that there's good and evil out there.
Yeah, you say how you get around the mistrust. Look, I think you just have to identify what you see as true, and you have to speak it openly and boldly, but without hate. This is the big problem I see right now. Is there's so much anger out there, and there's cause for the anger
on all sides.
Yes, but there's something about speaking the truth, okay, without anger, and it can be powerful. But it needs to be without rage, without that irritation. There's something powerful about that. Speaking the truth is powerful. You know, George Orwell, 1984, he said, in times of universal deceit, which is what we have right now, in times of universal deceit, speaking the truth is a revolutionary act. So there's a great deal of good that can come just from realizing the truth, stop being fooled, and speak up about it. But do it without hate. I'm telling you, there's a magic that can't be put into words.
David,
doing that.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you being on the program.
Thank
How
you for having
evil
me, George.
You got it. For Jason Bowers, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Pundit and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.